wireless Oculus, battery-free cell phones, iPhone lasers, and how you can create a smart home, sort of, for less than $100. All that, and Micah Sargent is here for Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1809, recorded Thursday, July 13th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order. Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what you need to know about technology today. I am Megan Maroney. Jason Howell is out, but joining me to talk tech news is Micah Sargent, senior editor at Mobile Nations, home automation expert, podcaster, Chihuahua enthusiast. Welcome to the show, Micah.
That is my most proud accomplishment. When I saw that, I thought, you know what? I'm going to own that. Maybe I'll even put it on my gravestone one day.
How many Chihuahuas do you have?
I have two. One's full-bred Chihuahua. His name's Henry. And I have a Chihuahua rat terrier. Her name is Mizzy. And they are both, you know, the best dogs in the world, of course.
And I saw on your Twitter that they did a lot of shopping for Prime Day.
They did. Both of them were like, hey, I heard there was a squeaky duck I could have. And suddenly Alexa was, oh, I said the word. They said, don't say it. I'm sorry. it was ordering. The Echo was ordering things. So it arrived and it turned out to be like this big. And I was very surprised, but they love it.
We have that in the notes, but it's not, I mean, oh, that's so cute. For a second when I saw it, it looked like it's like sewn onto his body, but I see he's just buried under it. He won, obviously.
Oh, yeah, he got the duck in the end. Okay, yeah, that's good. Henry, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and yeah, so we do have notes saying don't say the wake word for the Amazon Echo, but really, you know how it is. You're a podcaster, too. Unless you say the wake word plus, you know, order a giant television, you're probably not going to have anything happen besides it, you know, turn on and light up and be annoying for a second. But
yeah, so apologies for making it turn on, light up, and be annoying. But
no.
It happens.
Yes, it happens. We should probably talk about the tech news as much as I want to watch your Chihuahuas fight over it. Let's get to the tech news. Sources tell Mark Gurman from Bloomberg that Facebook will release a $200 wireless Oculus VR headset next year. That's right. I said wireless, meaning it won't be tethered to a PC or a phone. The device, codenamed Pacific, will look like the Rift, but will reportedly be lighter and be able to handle graphics better than the Samsung Gear VR headset, since it'll run on a Qualcomm Snapdragon mobile processor. Gurman says the new device will not have positional tracking. Oculus told TechCrunch that they don't have a device to unveil at this time, but they did confirm investments in the standalone VR category. So what do you think about a standalone device? Do you think this is really coming, or do you think they're just kind of feeling threatened by Apple's like leap into AR?
Look, I've seen some really impressive AR technology, these apps that have been created that are just demos right now using Apple's AR kit. And, you know, it's really picking up steam. And I think that everybody having their iPhones right there and being able to use them to kind of play games and get into these experiences, it's great. But if we're talking about like full on VR, right now you've got Oculus and you've got HTC Vive that are really going all in. And I'm really upset to hear that the positional tracking is not going to be there if this is going to be a thing that happens, because this could be really cool, especially with wires kind of getting in the way as you're trying to play these experiences.
Well, I mean, what does that mean, a headset without positional tracking? Like, what does that mean exactly when you're gaming?
Well, okay. The big thing with VR is it has to be very close to real life in order to trick your brain. And the less like real life it is, the more chance you have of getting sick. Okay, so if you're playing a game and you're trying to move around in space and your brain's going, this is not what the actual environment looks like. I know it's not. And then suddenly your brain's going, abort, abort. And next thing you start to get nauseous, and some people will actually, you know, get full on sick. And so without positional tracking, that means you're going to have to be more stationary, and the experience is going to be more driven likely by controllers or some sort of external source. And that just means that the game, on top of potentially causing, you know, sickness, is just not going to be as immersive and as good in terms of VR.
I mean, how far away do you think we are from that? I mean, right now the Oculus has to be powered by, you know, a $600, $800 computer, maybe even more, I'm not sure. I mean, how soon would we be able to get that kind of technology into something that we'd want to wear on our head?
Well, I will consult the crystal ball. It's telling me, no, I hope it's right around the corner, to be honest. You know, I think that there's a small part of anybody who's interested in AR and VR that wants the Star Trek holodeck. And if we can have that, you know, in 5 years, then that's great. But Oculus and HTC Vive being at the forefront of this, if Oculus is potentially saying that, hey, we've got wireless, but we're still having to make a compromise on positional tracking, then that shows that, you know, one of the companies that knows what they're doing is still struggling there, which means that the technology is obviously still a little bit out.
And from all the people that have commented on Apple's path this way, it just seems like the AR kit, like having it in your iPhone, I mean, no one imagines that the future is us holding our phones and doing AR that way. But this is just the, like, get it out there, get it into developers' hands at this point, and then go from there to something you might wear on your face.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's absolutely right, because what's interesting about ARKit is it's absolutely a developer-focused feature. Okay, there's not an app that comes with, you know, the next version of iOS, at least right now, that's going to be, this is playing with ARKit, except the Apple Maps flyover stuff is actually using ARKit to provide a virtual reality experience. And so you can use your phone and kind of look around in a flyover map and see the environment. And it's using the tracking stuff that AR uses to actually do the positional movement as you're kind of flying through the city or what have you. But yeah, I think that this is just a step along the route. But at the same time, like, I don't think it's accurate necessarily to say that AR is going to suddenly, you know, the ultimate goal is VR or something like that. I think that the two technologies are different and they both have their benefits. And some people just don't want to be teleported to another universe. And you know, that's some kind of security concerns as well. You want to be able to see your environment and feel safe in your environment. And I think that's where AR can be really excellent. Mm-hmm.
Well, we have some other, according to people familiar with the matter, news and gadgets. Devinder Hardwar's sources say Amazon is working on a competitor to Apple's yet-to-be-released HomePod. The upgraded Amazon Echo will reportedly feature a cloth covering, better sound, and an improved microphone. Hardwar says it will be slimmer and taller, about the size of four Echo Dots piled on top of one another. So what do you think about that? Do you think that Apple's got something in the works that will be equivalent to what Apple has in the works?
Yeah, I would imagine that Amazon is working on its next iteration of the Echo. And it seems that it sure sounds a whole lot like the HomePod. We're talking about these curves. We're talking about it being covered with a cloth. I mean, the HomePod is like a cloth-covered tater tot. And it sounds like whatever Amazon's working on is a cloth-covered tater tot. So it'll be interesting to see what the final design looks like and how much Amazon is mimicking a product that will be out in December, and they have like a launch date for the fall. So that is fascinating to me. If Amazon releases the HomePod before Apple releases the HomePod, and it's a successful product as an Alexa-enabled device, that's going to be pretty neat.
Well, I mean, it's I feel like Amazon should be paying us to buy all these devices, because every time I buy one, I seem to be buying more stuff from Amazon with it. But and none of them are very attractive. None of them look anything like any of my Apple devices. I mean, you know, the Echo Show is pretty much the ugliest thing, mm-hmm. piece of technology I've bought in the last 2 or 3 years, and yet I love it. So I don't know. I mean, what I would really like now that I have these things scattered in all over my house, I would like them to work together like a Sonos, but I don't even think Apple's HomePod is going to do that, is it?
Yeah, Apple's HomePod, it will work with other HomePods. It's AirPlay 2 technology that actually lets Apple TVs and HomePods and Apple, or rather AirPlay 2 supported speakers, all work together to provide whole home audio. So, you know, whenever we talk about HomePod, I really do compare it more to a Sonos device than I do any of these smart speakers made by Google or made by Amazon, because it really is. It's a premium speaker that just so happens to have Siri on board. You know, that's kind of how they announced it even. Siri was not the, you know, the feature, the big feature of the HomePod. It was the fact that it's got 75 tweeters and 64 subwoofers and all, you know, all the technology that's built inside. So yeah, HomePod is, it seems, after that market that really wants good audio in the home and potentially, you know, all around the house. But at $350, $360, it get expensive to create whole home audio with a HomePod.
Yeah. I mean, it imagine, yeah, having four or five of them. And in addition, if you're going to buy an Apple TV as well, if those, I mean, the new version of Apple TV might be, I don't know, over $200. It's a lot. But yeah, I mean, I guess if you're a music aficionado, then it's great for you. So, okay. So you wrote a piece about whether you should buy an Amazon Echo or an Echo Dot, or you should wait for the HomePod. What do you think? Who should wait? And who would you say go ahead and, you know, buy an Amazon device at this point?
So I really do. I think the HomePod is for a person who is, you know, steeped in the Apple ecosystem and who uses Apple Music exclusively, because Apple right now is marketing this device as an extension of Apple Music. It works with AirPlay, sure, but the main thing is it's got, you know, Apple Music magic built in, and you'll use it to play music from that service. If you are a Spotify user, if you are an Amazon Prime Music Unlimited user, if you use any of Google's music systems or any other sort of music system, it's not for you, because it's not going to provide those deep integrations. And on top of that, it's not going to let you control your music in the same way that you can with an Echo device. Because with Echo, I can talk to Spotify directly and say, hey, I want to play this playlist from Spotify. If you try to tell Siri to do that, then it'll look for it in Apple Music, I guess, or just tell you that it can't help you with that. So that's the first thing. If you're Apple Music and you're all in on Apple, then wait until December. If, on top of that, you're comfortable spending that much money and this you know, really premium audio experience seems interesting to you. On the other hand, Echo Dot is really fascinating because it has a little headphone jack on the back, and you can plug in the most expensive speakers you know, money can buy if you want to, and suddenly you have Alexa on this, you know, this really expensive whole home audio system that you've built. So I think the Echo and the Echo Dot, those are for people who may want to have a smart assistant in their home right now. And it's also for people who maybe don't want to spend a whole bunch of money on a device that kind of is pretty walled off in terms of what it can do. I mean, yes, you can AirPlay, but what happens when your Android using friend comes over and wants to like play a podcast that they like or play a song? Well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to send me the link and then I'll play it over AirPlay.
Like a cave person.
That's... Like a cave person.
Yeah, I mean, I can, so you won't be able to use Bluetooth. It's not Bluetooth enabled, so you can't connect your phone. Oh, I didn't realize
As it stands. Now, I mean, you know, by December that could change, but right now it is AirPlay exclusive. And yeah, that's disappointing.
Yeah, because I mean, I use Apple Music. I subscribe to Apple Music, and I just hook up my, you know, I just say pair Bluetooth, and it pairs, and then I can listen to. I mean, I have to control it with my phone, like a cave person, but a cave person with a smart home device in her cave.
First of all, I want a shirt that says "like a cave person." Okay. Now, but yeah, I mean, it's a little frustrating, and you look. Siri is in a lot of different languages, and I think that that's one of the main reasons. Of course, this is speculation, of course, but one of the main reasons that Siri doesn't work with Spotify and work with other third-party music subscriptions in terms of, you know, the control that it has in Apple Music. Meanwhile, Alexa and the Google Assistant can work with those other streaming services to provide those kind of deeper controls and say, hey, you know, play this playlist, or I don't like this song, or what have you. So, you know, I think I hope to see a future iteration, like HomePod software version 2 or what have you, HomePod OS, that includes some more integrations. And just give us Bluetooth, please.
Yeah. Well, Axios reports that Dev Boot Camp, one of the first coding schools, is going under. The school was founded in 2012 in San Francisco and acquired by test prep company Kaplan in 2014. In a Facebook post, Dev Boot Camp representative wrote that their business model was unsustainable. They had grown to 6 locations in the U.S. The company is often credited with rethinking traditional education models, and if the Facebook posts, the Facebook comments are to be believed, it will be missed by many. So Dev Boot Camp has really been, it was one of the first boot camps. We hear about boot camps all the time. There's some controversy about, you know, how easy it is to get a job from a boot camp, and they're working on being more transparent about that. What do you think about Dev Boot Camp going under?
Well, I think that, you know, as time progresses, and frankly, right now, coding is a very, very, very important skill. And I think, you know, in the future, it's going to be one that is just taught as early as we could possibly teach it. And to, you know, lose the school that's teaching these skills that are slowly but surely becoming just base requirements, table stakes, it's sad. You know, it shows that you can take a risk and you can try a different model, and sometimes it doesn't work. And it also kind of shows the risks, I think, of growing too quickly. And that's a big concern that I think any sort of startup, any sort of new company has as they're trying to keep everybody happy and also improve upon their experience.
Well, I think with the internet, and as we're rethinking education in so many different ways, like for-profit educational institutions, of course, have gotten in a lot of trouble. And there's a sort of this new expectation of like, well, I pay for school, I should get this great job. And that's not really traditionally the way education has worked. And we've spoken a few times to Quincy Larson, who started Free Code Camp, which is a totally free service. And what he says basically is, in order to really finish Free Code Camp, to learn how to code, you have to have a lot of, like, I mean, grit. It's hard. You have to dedicate a lot of time to it. You have to really want to do it. And I think, you know, the fact that you pay a certain amount of money to do a code camp, or, I mean, a coding boot camp, or some kind of, you know, any kind of for-profit school, and then you just expect a return because you paid for it. That's not really the way any kind of education works, I think.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that if that's your mindset, I think that it's a little incorrect. If you're not going to put in the work, if you're not doing what it takes to be successful, then you're not going to be successful. It is interesting when different, especially kind of like technical colleges and different code-specific or skill-specific learning talks about, hey, we're going to get you this job, or we're going to get it to you in 6 months. I don't know. I would not make that promise in the first place, because oftentimes it's based on an individual. And of course, we know there are lots of other things that come into play, like lack of diversity and people getting hired for wrong reasons. And I mean, there's just so many things that play into that. And so we've got kind of two sides of it. I think that it's a little misleading to promise those kinds of things on one hand. And then on the other hand, if somebody thinks that, okay, as long as I pay this money that I'm going to get a job, then that's not like that's just an incorrect belief. You have to also put in the work. So, yeah, if we talk about, you know, needing to really get in and get going and show that you're excited about this, and if that does lead to jobs, that's fantastic. So I think in the long run, our goal should be to make that, you know, a real thing. If there are genuinely people out there who show this passion and who show that they can do this, and let's get them jobs. But if you're just like looking to hand over some dollars and hope that you have a job out of the end of it, that's Not a great idea.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to imply that Dev Boot Camp was encouraging people that that was what was going to happen or anything like that. Just a trend in the industry. You know, as anything becomes popular, that it falls into the hands of people who just want to make a buck by, you know, selling those sorts of things. But we are always in search of a bigger, better battery for our cell phone while keeping our devices thin and light. But what if the best battery for a cell phone is no battery at all? Researchers at University of Washington have created the first battery-less cell phone that works by harvesting ambient power from radio signals and light using tiny photodiodes. It includes capacitive touch buttons and sends the calls through Skype. You're not going to be streaming Netflix in HD on this device anytime soon. Sorry. It consumes only microwatts of energy at a time. Did you get a chance to take a look at this phone, Micah?
This, I mean, it's gorgeous. Obviously, it's going to be my next phone, and I will, you know, wear it proudly around my neck probably. No, I think that this is exciting for one big reason, and that is all these people right now talking about wireless charging and saying, you know, oh, our phone offers wireless charging, and perhaps the next iPhone will offer wireless charging. Wireless charging is not a real thing. Yes, there's no wire running between your phone and the charging pad that you set your phone on, but your phone is stuck on the charging pad and it's there until it's charged, or you take it off and then you have to put it back on again to make it charge again. I can't wait for the future in which I can walk around with my device and there's literally no wire running between my device and whatever happens to be charging it. So please keep on keeping on, because this is what I think of when I think of wireless charging. And in fact, I guess that's even an inaccurate definition or a word for it, because it's not charging. It just is. It's constantly running because of these, you know, radio signals. So excellent. Let's have more of this, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like this is sort of like one step up from the two tin cans and string.
Yeah. You know, it's a little primitive right now. And I think someone had mentioned like powered by a potato in the chat, and that's kind of what it reminds us of. But if we can go from the retro green motherboard running the phone to, you know, my iPhone that's getting its power from the little light sensors built into it, I would pay lots of dollars for that.
Well, yeah, someone's going to figure it out. This obviously isn't something you can buy. This is just in research phase at this point. So I guess we're not planning on giving up our iPhones for the battery-free phone yet, which is a good thing because we now can talk about some iPhone rumors. And they involve lasers, which is always exciting. Sources tell Fast Company that Apple is working on a rear-facing 3D laser for AR and autofocus to be attached to the back of one of the three iPhones that Apple will announce in the fall, hopefully. Fast Company says Apple engineers are working on the new laser system as fast as they can, but it might not be ready until the 2018 phones. When it is available, it will be used for the 3D selfie effects that make Snapchat so popular, with me at least, as well as facial recognition for authentication purposes. What are your thoughts on these rumors, Micah?
Well, if we're adding, you know, more types of lasers and all this sort of focusing mumbo jumbo, then obviously we're going to get better camera systems. And better camera systems means better AR and potentially better VR. And it's a step down the road as we move into the future of really cool things that we can do with our devices. So, I mean, you say lasers and I'm already on board, but you say lasers meaning that I'm getting better camera photography. I'm getting, again, better experiences in AR and VR, better Snapchat filters, better Instagram filters, you know, when they come after Snapchat makes them, a better dancing hot dog. Then I'm sold. I think that it's great. And I think that lasers eventually means that I can, you know, put Snapchat filters on my dogs, right?
I hope so. That is the real, we're like cave people here. We can't even put Snapchat filters on our dogs. I'm hoping the lasers will let us, like the phone will let us shoot lasers at our enemies.
Ooh, laser tag, iPhone laser tag.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's I'm cool. on board.
So what about this? I mean, this also goes along with this rumor we've been hearing that there's going to be no Touch ID and it's going to recognize our face, which we have. I mean, it just doesn't. I can't believe that. It seems shocking to me that they would remove Touch ID and replace it with facial recognition that hasn't worked for anyone except for as a gimmick.
I am with you, Megan. I'm with you. I think that you know, there's kind of a spectrum of, you have people on one end that really, really, really hate Apple, and you have people on one end that really, really, really like Apple. And somewhere toward the really, really like Apple side, there is a group of hot takers who say that, like, anytime Apple comes out with something new or they make a compromise for something, like removing the headphone jack, there's reason for it. And Apple took a lot of time to study this, and they really thought about it, and, you know, labs this and fake phones that, and they've been testing it, yada, yada, yada. I imagine that if we do get this sort of facial recognition stuff, they've tested it. But the testing can only go so far. They have a huge user base. And in the real world, outside of, you know, labs and, like, fake externals of phones that have the facial recognition technology built in, however they're testing it, there's going to be a different kind of way that it plays out. And so it does worry me, because I know Touch ID to work so well, and I don't want to have to go back to a caveman world where I have to type in, you know, a code, a short code to enter my phone or get into my phone, because, you know, the facial tracking isn't working anymore.
After the break, Micah will make us smart about our smart homes. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. If you have ever needed a mortgage, you know it is a daunting task. I'm not against all face-to-face communications, but in some industries, I gotta say it's overrated. One of those industries is the mortgage industry. A lot of it is dated. It needs a client-focused technological revolution. It needs an app that will let you not have to be face-to-face with someone. Quicken Loans created that. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's also very convenient, like I said, sitting on your couch in your pajamas with an app. That is a great way to get a mortgage. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And it is very powerful. So it doesn't matter what your financial situation is. If you are buying your first home, if you are refinancing your 20th home, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. They will look at your income, your assets, your credit. They're going to give you the right mortgage that is tailored just for you. They will analyze all of your home loan options, and then all of the ones that you qualify, they'll let you know, and then they'll find the one that will work for your situation. Everyone's situation is different, and they can figure out what is right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. So over at iMore, you showed us how to install a smart home system without running any wires. What are some of the lessons that you learned from that experience?
Well, it turns out that most of the smart home tech that we install is wireless. You know, it used to be that there had to be wires kind of run between everything, and you'd have cameras installed here and motion sensors there and things that opened up, you know, fences outside and garage doors and temperature sensors and speakers, et cetera. And these were generally packages that were installed by home builders before anyone moved in. And now that HomeKit and SmartThings and all these different sorts of technologies have come along to make it available, I think, to more consumers, we're having to take a different approach. And, you know, it's not as easy for every person to go in and try to install a bunch of stuff that requires wires running between it. But as I mentioned, most of the stuff, just, it doesn't require wires. You have your Wi-Fi enabled bulbs. You have switches that you know can plug into the wall. You've got the list goes on and on and on. There's lots of technology. There's motion sensing and temperature sensors and all these things. And I have one right here that's a temperature and humidity sensor from Elgato, and it's the Eve Degree. And I mean, it, no wires. So it ended up being really easy to write that piece. It's not hard to have a wireless installation.
Now, do you have the whole Eve system at your house?
Yeah. I've got motion sensors and temperature sensors from them, as well as contact sensors and a few Eve switches that actually did require some wiring because they're installed in wall.
And then is there an Eve hub or does it connect to a different hub?
No, it actually uses Bluetooth LE, and it's HomeKit enabled, so it uses your Apple TV if you have a fourth generation or later Apple TV, or your iPad. If you have an iPad at home, then that also works as the hub. Now, that's if you're out of the house. If you're out of the house and you want to, say, shut off the light that's connected to that Eve light switch, then what happens is your phone communicates with the iPad or the Apple TV, and that sends the Bluetooth signal directly to the switch and tells it to turn off. If you're in home, though, then the phone can just do it itself. It can talk directly to the hub if it needs to, or rather to the switch if it needs to.
Because that was, about a year ago when I set an intention, I'm going to smarten up my home. It was all the hubs that really threw me. Like, there were so many of them, and I just gave up. But are you saying, they're not going that direction, these companies, anymore? Or you can just do it now that you have HomeKit, if you're on iOS, then you don't need the hubs?
It's interesting because, yes, Philips Hue, I still say, is the best lighting system that you can buy into. And Philips Hue does require a hub. I think we're seeing a trend right now where hubs are less important because Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are getting better at sipping very small amounts of power and also reaching longer distances. So I have all the way in my garage, which is all the way across the house, a contact sensor on my garage door, and from anywhere in the house, and even as I'm leaving, I still get notifications letting me know that the garage door has been opened or closed because the technology is just good. And since I bought it, I haven't had to replace the battery. So I really think we're going to see companies moving toward the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi area because of the fact that people, as you just mentioned, people really don't like to fool with hubs. And sometimes people don't know what they're supposed to do with hubs or bridges. Bridges are good in the sense that it's an easy way to kind of organize your lights. So in the case of Philips Hue, and as I think we move on and we see these devices are our smart assistant devices, like the Google Home and the Amazon Echo, being able to communicate directly with these Wi-Fi or Bluetooth enabled devices, that's where we can kind of start to forget about the bridge or the hub, because those devices themselves become the bridges and the hubs.
We should also say, your mileage of how easy it is to set up a lot of these systems will depend on how old or new your house is, right? With the Echo B4 that I began installing, I got about halfway through and I realized I didn't have the tiny flathead screwdriver, which is the most people have. Burke, who's in our studio, is laughing at me right now because he probably carries five or six around in his pockets at all times. But they have the Echo Bee has an extra kit that you can, that comes along with it if you have a more complicated system. But if your house is newer, you don't really need that.
The power extension kit, yes. I think, is what it's called. And yeah, I had to use it with that. And certainly, your mileage will vary. And if you're going to dig into that stuff, if you're not comfortable with it, please, please, please don't do it. Hire somebody, let somebody else come in who might know a little bit more, because if you do start getting into the wiring, like with me, replacing in-wall switches and things like that, if you don't know how to do that stuff, you could seriously injure yourself, if not legitimately kill yourself. It's dangerous. It's high power. It's not safe if you aren't comfortable doing it or if you don't know how. At the same time, these companies do include all the hardware and things like that you need, other than, screwdrivers and stuff like that. They include wire nuts if you're going to do, the outlets and the switches. And they include a lot of instructions and will give you everything that you need if you have a little bit of experience in that. But if not, or if you have an older home, a lot of these in-wall switches aren't going to work because they require something called the neutral wire. And many old wiring systems do not include neutral wires. And you'll actually have to hire an electrician to come and rewire your entire home to add a neutral wire to each of the boxes that you want to add, devices to.
So would you call, having installed the Echo before, would you call that a wireless device, or would you say you have to really go in there? I mean, there's some inside your thermostat that you have to connect.
Yeah. So when I was creating this article, what I really was going for was basically staying out of your walls, staying out of you know, digging into spidery crawl spaces and stuff like that. And so I do consider that device, that smart thermostat, to be a wired experience. And yeah, again, the instructions are included, and it wasn't difficult even when I had to install that power extender kit to make it happen. But sometimes people don't have all of the wires that they need running from their thermostat to their whole air conditioning slash heat system. And so you end up having to call an electrician for that. And it can get complicated really quickly. So this was all about building out a smart home without having to dig into anything. So, you know, you could, in theory, give these tools to, you could buy this kit of products and give it to anyone, and they'd be able to set up automations and not have to worry about digging into walls or calling an electrician to do it.
I'm glad I talked to you, because earlier this week, when Amazon announced that they were going to hire a bunch of smart home experts and offer installation at a cost, I said, you know, if you're going to be putting these devices in your house, you should know how to do it and do it yourself, which you have a much better point that if you really don't feel comfortable and you might die, then maybe it's not the best teachable moment. But I think that I'm still going to go forward and do the and finish the Echo B4 process. You have to turn off your air conditioning and your mm-hmm. heat. And sometimes that is in a spidery crawl space, but I think I can do it.
Yeah, I think you can too, Megan. And honestly, that one is one of the easier ones, because those wires are very, very, very low power that are running from your thermostat system all the way through to wherever you have it set up. That's a lot different than taking, you know, the light switch off of your wall and working with that, because you got to go to the breaker box. You got to make sure you turn off the right breaker. You know, some of the power in your house is going to go out while that breaker is out. If you live where I live, then the electrician did some funny, weird stuff where things are labeled incorrectly, and so you have to be careful of that. I mean, there are lots of different things that can happen, and that's where you really want to know what you're doing before you dig into it. But if you are interested, there also happens to be an article that I wrote about installing these in-wall switches. So certainly check that out if you're looking to, you know, upgrade your existing thing. But if you'd rather just stay wire-free, then wire-free is the way to be.
Yeah, and check out that article. You can read both those articles on iMore. And you also wrote about how you can smarten up your home a little bit on a budget. What can I get for $100?
Sadly, not much. So I actually, this one was pitched to me, and I, you know, was like, oh yeah, this is going to be great. It's going to be easy. I'm going to go in. I'm going to have like five things. I ended up kind of putting together, I think it was three different sort of kits, three different packs, smart home packs that you could buy. And I had to make a few compromises, because what I was hoping to do was stick to HomeKit-enabled devices. And the reason why, it's not because it's on iMore, because iMore actually has expanded their coverage beyond just Apple stuff. But if you get HomeKit-enabled devices, all 9 times out of 10, anything that's HomeKit-enabled is also going to work with the Echo, and 8 times out of 10 is also going to work with the Google Assistant. So that means, even though it's a smaller subset, you're buying into something that's going to work across no matter what devices you have in your home to control. So your voice is going to work if you're talking to Google, if you're talking to Alexa, or if you're talking to Siri. And that's what makes, I think, HomeKit-enabled devices great on the, you know, on the surface, but then also HomeKit-enabled devices, if you do have iOS, it's super integrated. And also, because of because of Apple's more rigorous safety concerns and security concerns, they are more secure products. So anywho, I did have to make a compromise, and I included a few that were not HomeKit-enabled, but do have great ratings and work well as Wi-Fi devices. So I think one is like a Wi-Fi bulb, and you get a motion sensor and a plug. And so, you know, you can build out a basic experience where when, you know, you walk in the house, it senses your motion, and then the light in the entryway turns on. Or you can have it set up to where it'll just notify you if it senses motion. So you could have that, you know, in your front yard or something like that, and it works after 6 p.m. and lets you know if there are, you know, people creeping around outside your house. And maybe you just want a plug that is connected to a fan and you get a temperature sensor. And it's like, okay, it's 75 degrees in here. Now I'd like for this fan to come on because it needs to cool down. So basically, for under $100, you can build out a basic automation experience that involve a few different things. And this is also why I suggested HomeKit-enabled accessories for the most part, because on top of these devices kind of working together to be controlled, if it's HomeKit-enabled, it can also use your phone's location in and of itself as a trigger. So when I leave my home, then I want that light that I bought to turn off. It can do that. When I enter my home, I want that light that I bought to turn on, or I want the fan to turn on, or what have you. So there are some fun experiences that you can create using these different packs that I've kind of built out. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, smart home technology is still new, and well, it's just gaining popularity, I think, on its own as these individual products that consumers can buy. And because of that, I don't encourage people to, you know, go to Amazon and find the $5. Oh, Lord, if there's something that's $5, please, for the love, don't buy that. Because this stuff needs to be safe and secure. And that almost always means that the company is going to have to spend more money to create it, which means it's going to cost you more money to buy it.
Right. And you want them to invest in, yeah, in updates and like privacy and all the other thing. Yeah, so exactly.
Exactly.
Well, after the break, I get schooled on the popularity of pressure cookers. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. If anyone out there doesn't regularly lose his or her stuff, I would like to hear from you. Please email me immediately at megan@twit.tv if you don't lose stuff regularly. Tweet at me. I'm at Megan Maroney. I need to know your secret. Because if you, like me, regularly use things, you're going to want to hear what Tracker has done now. They have created the Tracker Pixel. It's pretty new. It's their new upgraded Pixel. And with it, you will never have to worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel, it's the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You place it on whatever you tend to lose the most, your keys, your wallets, even your cat. You can even place it on your pet turtle. Although, let's be honest, you really have to be ignoring that turtle if he gets away from you because, you know, he walks very slowly. But Tracker is small enough to fit on a turtle or all your smallest items. And when you misplace that item or the turtle runs away, with the Tracker Pixel attached, you use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in just seconds. It even has powerful LED lights so you can find your items in the dark. If you lose your phone, you press the button on your Tracker Pixel and then your phone rings, even if it's on silent. You can locate your item, even if it is miles and miles away. Even if that turtle, if you haven't seen him in weeks or like a month and he's a mile away, every Tracker user is part of a large crowd locate network. It's the largest crowd locate network in the world. And so they will find your turtle for you or your cat or your keys or your wallet or all the many things that you lose, your drone even. There's really no reason not to try it. Tracker has a 30-day money-back guarantee. So go to thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 20% off your order. So yesterday, so often I say things on the show and then I get tons of email and I'm just amazed. I marveled at the fact that one of the most popular items purchased on Prime Day was a pressure cooker. I am apparently very naive about the popularity of the pressure cooker and the importance of this particular pressure cooker. Will wrote in, the pressure cooker in question is a cult favorite, the Instapot. And it was a darn good deal. It's a smart pressure cooker, which can even... You can even program it if you buy the top level one. Logan wrote, actually, my wife and I did buy the Instapot 8-quart cooker during Prime Day, although looking from looking at CamelCamelCamel.com, it was the normal sale price. We bought the 6-quart one last Black Friday and use it all the time and found a need for a larger one when cooking some roasts, and other times we have wanted one for cooking up potatoes or other things. When we have meat in the other one, we make homemade Greek yogurt from milk. We get at the local dairy. Now, I'm not sure that that's made in the pressure cooker, but someone can help me out with that. You cook frozen... You make milk with a pressure cooker?
Yogurt.
Yogurt? Wow. Cook frozen or thawed roasts. Cook potatoes to mash up perfectly and tons of great other great uses. And Dustin also wrote, I know as a vegan that the Instapot is widely used and there are many vegan Instant Pot Facebook groups to share recipes. And finally, Kenny who says a lot of visually impaired people buy the Bluetooth model of the Instapot because when you open it and close it, it makes different noises. Also, the Bluetooth app for iOS is accessible, so you can program it with lots of presets. Micah, are you a pressure cooker aficionado?
No, they said the word smart, and so now I think I have to be, right?
Right. Well, yeah, yeah. You're an Internet of Things expert until you Internet of Things your pressure cooker.
This is so interesting to me because, yeah, I mean, my whole Twitter was ablaze with this. What is it called? Instapot.
Instapot.
Yeah. What a name. Apparently, people really love their Instapots, and I had no idea that this was a thing. I'm not even sure. Now I know you can make yogurt in a pressure cooker. Like, I always saw them as like dangerous devices because they're a lot of pressure. I don't know. This is very strange to me. I like my crock pot. I was okay with that, so I didn't buy an Instapot. But, you know, I'm glad that people are so gung-ho about this product. I think that the accessibility thing is really fascinating. And I think what's most interesting about that is like you have to get the Bluetooth model for the notifications to kind of make the noise. I think that the company should pay attention to that and maybe add it to the non-Bluetooth models. But in terms of, have you ever pressure cooked before? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I guess I'm not totally clear if a rice cooker and a like a crock pot are the same thing like that.
And, I think all three are different, right? Okay. There's like a rice cooker that's really made for rice and the pressure cooker that's all about, you know, pressure.
Okay.
And then the crock pot, which is just, you know, low heat over a long period of time. I don't know. I really don't know much about pressure cookers, but I know people like them.
Yeah, I guess people like them. I don't eat meat. So that like we used to have a crock pot, which I guess is different, but that's what I was thinking. And we got rid of it because it's like, that's what I always thought that you would make in it. But now, according to our viewers, there's lots of vegan recipes. So I might have to try the Instapot. And I guess it's just that it really wasn't a deal according to Camel. So
yeah, apparently that's a lot of Amazon's Prime Day. It ends up that many of the deals aren't actually deals and it's just typical, it costs $75, but we cut it down to $25. And it's like, yeah, it probably cost you $6 to make and you're charging $25 for it. But I didn't know that there was a Camel site. So now I'm going to have to check that out and be sad about all of the money that I've probably wasted on Amazon over the years.
Whatever you do, don't tell your chihuahuas. They don't need
to
know.
There you go. They don't need to know about how much that duck cost.
Right, exactly. TNT's fan of the day is Mitch Miller, who says he watches us in his home office. So he sent a picture of yesterday when we streamed in black and white in honor of Net Neutrality Action Day. And so there we are in our film noir version of Tech News Today. I noticed it. I guess on all the mobile nation sites or just on iMore, you guys added like a sort of threat to the open web at the end of all your stories.
Yeah, we did a couple things. We had my pal Daniel Bader, who wrote a really good article just kind of about what's at stake and explaining. It seems like every year net neutrality is kind of a re-education or a new education for people who are just kind of learning about it. And so we had that posted across the sites. And then, yeah, we had kind of rewritten some of our headlines so that they involved net neutrality in some way, including some silly ones like, you wouldn't even be able to get to these products on Amazon if net neutrality wasn't here. So, it was sometimes like a wink, wink, ha ha kind of moment. But I really do think that the visibility is what's important because someone's going to see that. They're going to wonder what the heck is going on. And then maybe we'll ask their smart assistant what net neutrality is.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the headlines yesterday and it took me a while to figure it out. But I was looking at one of your articles in the comments. Someone, I'm sure you saw this, someone commented like that headline is I saw the comment today and they said that headline is misleading. It implies that you're going to learn about how to save net neutrality with your smart home. And then this commenter realized, oh, I get it. That was just yesterday. So, but that's your next pitch, how to save net neutrality with your smart pressure cooker.
Yeah, I was going to say it starts with a pressure cooker and maybe you add some smart lights after that. So we'll figure it out.
If you want to be our fan of the day, just show us how you watch or listen to TNT, record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it. Finally, tonight, there are so many things to fear at the ATM. Hackers, thieves, Now we can add one more fear to that list, getting trapped inside. Ray Pauletta from Gizmodo says that a Corpus Christi, Texas man was caught inside an ATM for 2 hours before he finally was rescued by someone who he had slipped a note to through the machine. The man was a contractor who'd been fixing a lock in a room connected to the ATM when he accidentally locked himself in. He didn't have his phone with him or his Apple Watch, apparently, and he had to send several notes before someone took him seriously. So it was several hours sending the notes. Because I'm not sure how I would feel if I got a note like that. I would just be like, oh, you're pranking me. This is a way to steal my PIN code. What do you think, Micah?
I would first kind of look around for hidden cameras. Honestly, I can't get past the fact of just being terrified of being... I am a bit claustrophobic, so the idea of being stuck anywhere... it doesn't even have to be a small space, but just like being stuck somewhere and hoping that someone will, you know, believe what I'm saying. That's terrifying to me. So like my palms are sweaty just thinking about that aspect of it. But yeah, I think if someone passed out some notes through the front of the machine or whatever, I'd be like, okay, what's going on here? Especially because we've, at least in my area, we've heard a lot about skimming being a huge thing right now, and especially like at gas stations and ATMs, people were placing the actual card scanners for skimmers and stealing people's information. It's like, how does this involve that? And should I walk away? Should I call the police? But again, relying on someone to trust that what you're saying in this note is true is pretty terrifying.
It is. Yeah. I mean, that's I do like the fact that that my Apple Watch has the emergency in there in case I'm stuck in an ATM. Although I was camping this weekend, and I was glamping, I'll be honest. And so the part of the camping site, they offer you these little battery chargers for your cell phone so that, I know it's horrible and it was wonderful, but I forgot my Apple Watch charger. So I had lots of lightning cables. I don't travel anywhere without lightning, but I forgot my Apple Watch charger, and I have the Series 2 watch, and it lasted all weekend long. It lasted from Friday to Sunday night, which I was amazed, but I had to turn it on power reserve, which I never do, and I kind of forgot how, and one I pushed the side button for a really long time, and then all of a sudden the siren came out of my Apple Watch because it's the 911, and then I was afraid, but it doesn't actually call 911. I guess it calls your, if you set it up right, it's supposed to call your emergency contacts.
Yeah, it can notify, you know, emergency and let your emergency contacts know what's going on. It'll also show your medical ID information and all that jazz. So it can be helpful. I know that right now a lot of it is still sort of buggy, and they're getting all of the stuff worked out with that. And by the time watchOS 4 rolls around, we'll really see the full feature there. I think that this is a really cool feature and has the potential to be very helpful to people. And in fact, come iOS 11, it's also coming to the iPhone itself. And I can't remember if it's the home button or the side button, but you press one of them like 10 times and then it'll do the same kind of thing. So if you can imagine you're in a situation where instead of it just being something like, you know, you're trapped somewhere where you can totally do that out in the open, but if you're in danger and it involves a person, you can very subtly, you know, press those buttons and be able to call on help. So I'm happy that Apple is adding this. And I think that it has the potential to, save lives, honestly. It could genuinely save lives. So it's pretty cool. But, you know, in the future, if your Apple Watch is having trouble charging, you just want to get down and start a fire, and then you put it inside of your little campfire skillet, and then the inductive heat. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
I trusted you, Micah.
Don't do that.
What do you do? You just decide that you don't need your Apple Watch.
Yeah, that, which is too bad. I mean, I don't know what else you would do, because I don't know of any other. Well, maybe you could get like an inductive charging plate to work of some sort, because it's the same type of deal. Mm-hmm. But I've never tested that. And again, you don't want to end up frying your battery, so I wouldn't recommend trying it. But now I might have to.
Yeah, it could be a good article. Yeah, I turn it on power reserve. And be thankful you do that anyway, because whether you're glamping or camping or on vacation at all, you don't really need to get all of those alerts that you constantly get. Which was a lesson for me. It was a teachable moment for me.
Micah,
thank you so much. This was so much fun. Micah Sargent is a senior editor at Mobile Nations, a host of so many podcasts. Clockwise, what other your two favorite? Well, not your two favorite. I don't want to pick favorites. That's like picking your children. Or where, just tell us, where's the best place to find everything that you do?
Well, if you're looking for all the podcasts that I do, all the work that I do, you can find links to everything that I do. I'm not kidding when I say this. You go to www.chihuahua.coffee. And that site has all of the links that you need to all of the podcasts, all of the writing, all of the social media streams. And I have to thank Rene Ritchie for that. It was during an iMore show episode, and he said, you should have a chihuahua.coffee domain. And I said, yes, I should. And I went immediately and bought it. So the links are all there, friends.
Okay. Chihuahua.coffee or Micah Sargent on Twitter or iMore or Clockwise or Relay FM, the incomparable. You're just everywhere. And I thank you so much for taking time out of all of that to spend some time with us. It was great talking to you, Micah.
I had such a good time. Thank you for inviting me on. I hope I get to come back sometime in the future. It was
a good time. I hope so too. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And of course, TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv, or you can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also hit us up on Twitter. That's at TechNewsTodayTV. And you can subscribe to the show. We hope that you do at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me your Instapot recipes, I am at Megan Maroney. Thank you to our technical director, Brian. Thank you to Burke for helping out in the studio. Thank you to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you tomorrow.